We all wish we could talk to animals. As it turns out, we can. Animal Connections with Laura Rowley explores the nature of interspecies communication. What are our animals trying to tell us? Animals commune through love, a force that opens all doors. Listening to them teaches us how to be better humans. Why? We can trust them to tell us the deepest truth about who we are and how one can grow into a more powerful version of self. Laura shares over 20 years of stories and wisdom learned from her work as an animal communicator in this hard and thought-provoking show.
Welcome. I'm Laura Rowley, and you can listen to Animal Connections with Laura Rowley on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network every Friday at 9 a.m. or 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Listen online or on your mobile devices. To learn more and for a full schedule, go to dreamvision7radio.com. Dream Vision 7 Radio Network is the media partner for the Omega Institute. Thank you for joining me today. We have an interesting show planned, the title of which is Are We the Less Evolved Species? So I asked that question somewhat tongue-in-cheek because in my work as an animal communicator, I'm often asked to sit in the middle of where mankind and animal kind are trying to coexist. They're trying to find passage through perhaps some rocky waters where they're a little bit not sure who should be honored and who should be listening to whom. For instance, the average person phones me wanting to make sure their animal is happy, but often, more times than not, there is some area where they feel dissatisfied over the animal's behavior or willingness to perhaps maybe obey the rules of the home, not bark at other dogs, not chew on the furniture, walk on the leash quietly. Why won't they do this? People ask me. And then the animal always has its opinion about what the human's asking of them and kind of wonders why the human is really even asking that. So my job is to try to sort through all that and find for each case a nice path that works, that's a compromise based on safety, needs, happiness, emotions, and kind of the whole package. So it's always very individual when people phone me for their appointments. I never really know when I start my day what kind of cases I'll have or what they'll be about. But one thing is for certain is that we have this interconnectedness going on of the animal kingdom and of mankind right now that is intensely important to both parties in these conversations. The dog cares for resolution. The person cares for resolution. And they're just trying to figure it out. So if all goes well, I can successfully navigate that and help each one understand the other, and we can reach an impasse where everybody's happier. So sometimes I find that the animal is coming from a place when I said, are humans less evolved than animals? The reason I said that is because the animals are coming from a place often of just sort of pure joy and pure love. They're just being themselves. The person's a little more cloudy about a lot of that. They are caught up in their ego and trying to work through some of their things. So let me give you an example. I was speaking to a sheepdog the other day. His name was Roland, very, very adorable sheepdog. And the owner called me because when they went on walks, Roland lunged at other dogs when they were approaching on the sidewalk and actually probably would attack them if he were loose. So it was scary because Roland weighed a lot. He was strong. He was in the prime of his life, and he was dragging this lady, Kathy, all over the place. And she was afraid, and the other dogs were getting to be afraid. The other owners were afraid to walk their dogs near Roland. She couldn't walk with her friends because Roland was kind of attacky. So Roland, meanwhile, was super sweet and, you know, sat on her lap at night and watched TV with her, you know, put his head on her lap. He was too big to actually sit on her lap. And she said, what's going on that he wants to attack the other dogs? So Roland said, well, I'm protecting Kathy. Kathy's in my territory. When we go for a walk, whatever's outside the territory is can't approach us. I'm a sheepdog. I protect my flock. and Kathy is my flock. So when we go out into the world, we don't allow other dogs to run through our flocks. We don't let them even come into our fields. We maintain order. That's what a good sheepdog does. I've been bred to be a proper sheepdog. I know how to do my job. This is the right way to do it. I love my job. I love Kathy. As you can see here, it's kind of a classic case of the dog is kind of right there. I mean, you know, they were bred to do a service. He's doing the service he was bred to do. But meanwhile, Kathy's starting to feel like she's going to maybe build a kennel and never take him for a walk again. So that's not going to be great for Roland because he loved his walks. So first we had a chat about it. Do you love your walks? Do you want to keep going? I asked him. And he said, of course I do. This is fantastic to go for a walk on a nice day. So he felt, though, that Kathy wasn't giving him any instruction to do anything other than she was pulling on the rope or on the leash, and he wanted to be told what to do. Sheepdogs are used to shepherds instructing them. So I said to Kathy, what do you do when he starts to pull on the leash? And she said, well, I pull back. I'm just afraid of losing him. You know, she's panicking, of course. Most of us would in the presence of a, you know, 70-pound dog trying to tow us around while it's growling and snarling. So I explained to Kathy that sheepdogs are used to shepherds who are very strong leaders. They convey a sense to the dog, this is what you want to do now. They whistle, they point from afar, often actually from a half a mile away. They'll point at something they want the dog to do, and the dog just answers hand signals. So I said, you're not really telling Roland what to do other than you're just pulling on his leash, and he doesn't know what that means. So we had a chat with Roland about that, and she decided to hire a dog trainer to teach her some skill sets that would make her appear to Roland to be a stronger leader. So this is often a component in what I do, is sometimes I just try to point you in the right direction. I explain to Roland what's going on so he understands, and then she hired a trainer. The trainer came out a few times and taught her some skill sets about how to lead a dog, which she needed to know, that made Roland feel like he didn't have to come out like the SWAT team every time, because she would say to him, I've got this. We are safe. You don't have to protect me. I want you to do what I'm asking you to do so that we both can proceed safely. So that was, I would say I do, oh gosh, I do maybe sometimes 100 of those in a month, a scenario like that, where everybody's just on sort of, nobody's doing anything wrong, but it's not going very well either. So I always tell people it's a good idea to consult minimally with a trainer, because you may just not be conveying what the animal needs you to hear. But also I think it's kind of interesting to look at it from just maybe a little bit more of an esoteric perspective. If we go up a notch to the metaphysical, yes, we can say Roland needed training on the physical level, but on the metaphysical level, whose will should be honored, Roland's or Kathy's? You know, who's got the right idea there? Nobody's really doing anything wrong. And sometimes I think it's helpful if you look at why they're asking for some sort of ambassadorship. Why do they need me to help them step in? What's their motivation? Well, it's because Kathy wanted to feel safe, of course, but also because she wanted to take the dog and bring him out into the world where he's not really accustomed to being. In other words, she had a need that really had nothing to do with his need. What was Roland's need? He probably wanted a backyard with a sheep in it, or two sheep, so he could chase the sheep and organize the sheep and keep the sheep safe. So humankind often has, oh gosh, we have such intense, deep, complex, complicated reasons for how we do with our dogs, what we do with our dogs, or our cats, or our horses. And animals are simpler than that. They kind of just are. So we've all heard the idea that we're just supposed to be more present. We're supposed to be in the now. If we want to evolve into our higher selves, we should simply be eliminating all strange motivations that seem to be ego-based, and try to just really be where we are, enjoying where we are, and being ourselves fully. So animals do that pretty well. We're the ones that throw them into a world that is pretty complicated. Now, because we have a frontal lobe, because we have a brain where our left brain and our right brain can work together, and we can edit what we're going to say and what we're going to do, we've been able to stay organized and cooperate and follow laws and create, well, a civilization, because that's what our brains are able to do. We're able to discern what happened before is happening again. This law applies to that, so therefore, this is what I should do. But animals don't think that way. They're just being in the present. So we bring up our old provable histories based on things like scientific theory, where we say, well, something is provable if it's repeatable. This is the start of the age of reason, right? That was the idea behind the age of reason, that gravity, for instance, if the apple falls from the tree on day one, on day two, it will fall again. It will not go up because there's gravity in place. There's a law there. So we can understand these laws and learn from them, which is great. It makes us able to judge, and we become good at categorizing and organizing. We pull up to a stop sign in our cars. The stop sign always means the same thing on day one as it meant on day 55. I'm supposed to stop here, make sure nothing's coming, then proceed. So we can apply laws like to civilization. We can apply them to science, mathematics. We can use this to progress. So we feel really quite evolved because we've been able to download all these different natural laws and laws of physics, statistics, quantum theory, mathematics, and we've been able to be real smarties. We can get through the world by constantly applying these laws and knowing what to do. If all goes well, we find a cooperative way to navigate any difficulties we might have with other people. We apply a law, but how many times do laws get applied where you have to have an attorney decide or a court decide who gets precedence, who gets to win over which law is being applied? So even in our world, it gets tricky. Otherwise, I mean, we have a lot of courts and we've gotten a lot of attorneys full of people that think they're right and the other person is wrong. So this ego-based thinking that the humankind kind of bases our civilization on makes us good at judging. But we can be kind of drawn into a world where it's us versus them. I'm right. I know the law. I know how to apply it. You're wrong. Therefore, I'm right. And that can be a real drawback. Animals are a little simpler. Their instinctual guidance is more like our higher self. It kind of flows with the life force. I'm outside. I like where I am. I think I'll lay down on the grass. I'll blink into the sun and take a snooze because my body feels tired and I need to absorb the sunlight. That might be what the cat thinks, or the dog, or the horse. They say yes to natural laws. Like if they want something, they think, yes, I'm going to go to that bowl of food. They don't think like we do, which is something more like, I'm afraid I won't have everything I need, so I better eat now. Sometimes we eat not because we're hungry, but just because we sort of feel a need to satisfy ourselves, and we're kind of limiting necessarily whether or not it's even pleasurable. For instance, if you think about a bunny running across the yard, the bunny might be running from a dog. That would be because he's afraid of the dog. But usually, that isn't how the bunny thinks. The bunny is just running towards safety. He isn't really, is he afraid of the dog? Well, sure, but he hasn't really, they don't think that way. They think, I'll run towards what works for me, what life flows. I need safety now. I need food now. I need the sunlight now. So they just, the natural world is always moving towards what it needs based on a simple idea that if I find what I need, I'll be safe, I'll prosper, and more of the abundance will flow through me. For instance, a tree doesn't stand out in its field and wonder, oh, am I going to get enough sunlight here? It spreads its branches when it's a young tree and it knows this is where I am, I'll get enough sun and it's all going to work out. So the human world can be organized and cooperative, but we have to always trust each other to make sure that that happens. And sometimes we don't even trust ourselves. I see this a lot in the workshops that I teach. People have me come They might have me come with just their family, sometimes privately, or they may have me come to a barn where all of the different people that have horses there want me to talk to each of the horses and do a talk with them. Or sometimes it's a group of friends that have me come to a certain state or town, and I come, I do a talk, I might discuss what they want to do in advance, perhaps we'd like to talk to all of our dogs, great, we bring the dogs, we talk about how we're going to talk to the dogs, and I try to help you see how this works in the event that you want to develop that skill within yourself. So every workshop's a little different. But the one thing that I often see is that when people are trying to communicate with animals, for instance, we'll sit in a circle, we'll have maybe somebody's Labrador Retriever, a sweet, kind, relaxed dog in the middle of the circle, and I'll instruct everyone about how it's best to try to do interspecies connection, communication, and what to look for. So as I'm explaining them the techniques and what I want them to do, I notice that everybody starts to look worried and a little stressed. And so I usually stop there and we discuss whether or not they're nervous about doing this. And almost everybody raises their hand and has a fear of being foolish for trying, maybe, or a fear of not being successful, or they're even wondering if this is possible. Their skepticism is up and they think, what am I doing sitting here? Or they're excited, but they're not sure they can do it, and that really bums them out, so they're not even sure they should try. In other words, our minds, our ego mind, is thinking about all these reasons about why the natural laws that we know before my class can be applied to my class now, so therefore they don't know how that works, so that can't be true, so they've already judged themselves to be unsuccessful. So, of course, we all know whenever you go to start a new skill, you have to really fake it till you make it. You have to try without worrying too much about the outcome. Or if we don't do that, we sort of psych ourselves out and we never would try anything that was hard or new. You know, an artist would never pick up a paintbrush, and no one would ever write music if they didn't really know how it was going to sound in advance. You have to try it and perfect it and get better at it. It's a skill. So I always try to reassure people and get them all on the same page about that, and let them laugh at themselves for being nervous in advance, because their egos are worried, really, what? They're actually kind of worried about being embarrassed. So there's nothing to be embarrassed about. This is something you're trying. It's going to come out nicely. If I were to sing a song right now and it didn't come out so well, I'd clear my voice, clear my throat, and I'd try to sing it again. For the enjoyment of singing it, just for the sake of being in the flow of it, as opposed to being correct about it. So our sophisticated minds have become preoccupied with being correct. That's my point. I'm not sure that being correct is actually being particularly evolved. Because at the end of the day, it isn't the person that is most correct that we care about the deepest. It's the person that feels deeply. It's the person that cares deeply, that loves unconditionally, that is generous and kind, who's in the flow of their emotions and doing just what feels good. If we could all take a moment every day to just do what we wanted to do for one another and have that always be our priority, then lots of times we would behave very differently than we have to when we are engaged in the laws of mankind or at work. Sometimes we can't do the kind thing, the compassionate thing, because there's rules that have to be applied to the situation. And if we start breaking the rules with one person, we'd be breaking the rules with all people. Therefore, you know, you can't reach out to someone at the bank and say, I know you'd really like to cash your check, ma'am, but you can't cash it because you don't have your license with you, and we never allow anyone to cash it. The woman said, but I got a ride here. I'm elderly. I'm blind. It was a big deal for me to get the ride. I have to have this money in the bank. Can I please just put it in the bank? No, I'm sorry. That's against the rules. Now, if it were our own selves, we'd probably go, oh yeah, go ahead, put it in the bank and we'll make sure it's okay later. We might want to reach out, grab our car keys and drive her home and get her a license. But we can't. We have rules that have to be abided. So we've created this system, this society that's got layers and layers and layers of laws and rules based on our ability to think better than other species, to organize better, So in many ways, it's great. We wouldn't have civilization without it. But we rely on it so heavily now. And this is one of the things I like to explore in this show is what is it that the animal kingdom points out to us so that we can grow within ourselves and even grow a better society, grow a better civilization, just by being responsible to ourselves and self-reflective about some of the better things that we're editing out of human civilization or out of our own experience, where we're not flowing towards what feels easy and right, which would be, in my silly example, you'd want to help that blind lady out and cash her check if you were the bank teller, right? But we can't always do that. So it's always fascinating to think about how we could do things better, because that's how civilization evolves. That's how the next best thing happens. I don't know the answers, of course. I'm just an animal communicator, but and I sit in a unique spot where I'm watching two worlds with kind of a different principle governing each of those rules, trying to balance themselves and even do right by one another often, but missing the mark often, or being confused about how to do the best they can do for each. And so in the show and in my work, I always like to explore that with people, because that's the place where we can really learn. And that's where the place where we can personally and as a civilization develop into something better than perhaps what we are now. And that's the goal. So thank you very much. You're listening to Laura Rowley, and this is Animal Connections with Laura Rowley.
Animal Connections with Laura Rowley is an intuitive show created for you to learn what it's like to talk to animals. Laura shares 20 years of experiences of being a pet psychic and healer every Friday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, media partner for the Omega Institute. Our beloved animals share our lives and have amazing insights into our well-being, providing us with opportunities for personal growth once we truly begin to listen. It's fun to use animal wisdom to enhance our emotional and spiritual world. Who better than our furry friends to teach us the wisdom born of unconditional love?
Quantum Jumps presents a radical new paradigm that we exist in an interconnected holographic multiverse in which we literally jump from one parallel universe to another. In a moment, you can become smarter, more confident, happier, more outgoing, more effective, in better relationships, with more willpower. When you sense a new connection to another possible you, living the life you'd prefer, immerse yourself naturally into that new state of being. And voila, you've made a quantum jump. Supported by scientific research, Quantum Jumps is an inspirational book backed with practical tools to help you live a happier, more prosperous life. Learn more at quantumjumps.com.
What if your dog, cat, or horse could help you with your love life? What would they suggest? It's fun to think about and a wonderful way to conduct yourself. After all, animals know well how to love and invite us to love them unconditionally. That's a pretty great way to live life. Animals always communicate with our highest good as their central focus, even when sometimes we feel stymied or frustrated with their behavior. Visit laurarowleyhealer.com to book a workshop or private long-distance phone reading. Laura's readings and workshops help you find the part of you that's able to tune in and connect to your amazing animals. Laura Rowley believes we can all understand by listening differently. Book a workshop or private long-distance phone reading now by going to laurarowleyhealer.com. That's L-A-U-R-A-R-O-W-L-E-Y healer.com.
Are you loving who you are, as you are? Or are you stuck in old pain, fear, and anger? Philomena Tripp's inspirational book, Invisible Courage, shows us we all have infinite value. Discover how one courageous woman, born with severe birth defects, overcame immense challenges, creating a happy, nurturing, and successful life. Her first step was learning to love herself. Philomena's incredible journey exemplifies the resilience of the human spirit. Buy the book Invisible Courage by Philomena Tripp, available in paperback, Kindle, and now audiobook. Visit philomenatripp.com. That's philomenatripp.com.
Welcome back. I'm Laura Rowley, and this is Animal Connections with Laura Rowley on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network. You can listen every Friday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time, or listen online or on your mobile devices. To learn more and for a full schedule, go to dreamvision7radio.com. Dream Vision 7 Radio Network is the media partner for Omega Institute. You can reach me through Animal Connections with Laura Rowley on my Facebook page. That's the name of it, Animal Connections with Laura Rowley. I'd love feedback. I'd love topics that interest you, questions that you have. It's always good fertile ground if I get some feedback on my Facebook page. Or you're welcome to contact me through my personal website, which is laurarowleyhealer.com. So thank you for joining me. We're discussing the idea of the evolution of species, mankind and the animal planet. What is different about them and how do they coexist? We have bigger brains, and as the primo brain species, we tend to think that everything else has to kind of work around us because we know how to be organized and we know we've made this big civilization. The animal kingdom tends to think that it's been doing this for thousands of years and why are we complicating everything? We tend to not go with the flow in a way that our higher selves would want, but we sometimes become officious and perhaps a little too concerned with what law to apply to our activities on any given day. So, of course, we all have to make a living, and we all have to do some of the things we have to do, which might not be what we want to do. Animals pretty much get to do what they want to do, which is lovely and wonderful. Almost everyone that I talk to, even if they're frustrated with their animal and they call for a consultation about their frustration, pretty much uniformly wants their animal to be happy, but is a little bit confused about how to make that happen. So that's my job. So one person who called recently, her name is Jean, and she's in her later 50s-year-old woman, and she rides horses competitively. She jumps them. She's been doing it since she was a little kid, so to her, this is just the loveliest thing she can do. She loves to be on her horse, and she has a horse named Magic, and they were going along great for a couple months, and then she started to show him, and he would sort of stutter before he jumped over the fence for a half a stride, and so he kind of almost backed up underneath her, and she would just like catapult over his head. So this happened erratically. Her trainer tried to help her with it. It would come and go until finally she broke her shoulder, and then later on, after her shoulder was almost repaired, she started riding again. It happened again, and I don't remember what the injury was then, but another bad injury. In your 50s, it's not great to be breaking bones when you're a postmenopausal woman. So she was starting to just fear for whether or not she was going to be able to ride or not. So she started to train harder and work harder, and she was conscious of the idea that perhaps her balance wasn't as good as it used to be. So she was very much trying to be understanding of Magic's difficulty, but she said, "Why is it he's trying to hurt me? I mean, I could die if I break my neck. I already broke my shoulder," which hadn't even fully healed. So Magic weighed in with his opinion, which he said that her anxiety was such that just before the fence, this is a pretty common problem with riders, she was anticipating that he was going to take off, and in her anticipation, a stride early, she was starting to slightly push her hips forward and her shoulders forward. His problem was that shifted all of her weight onto his shoulders at the very moment when he was trying to lift them off the ground to jump a fence. So it kind of pushed him back down because suddenly her 150 pounds was kind of pushed forward on his, what they call in the horse world, on his forehand. So in other words, his front legs felt a little like she was pushing them back onto the ground when he tried to lift them. So he stopped because he thought, well, this is silly. I might not make the fence. I might not clear the fence. She was jumping pretty big fences, like 3.5 feet, which is a big fence. And he thought, well, it's just safest if I stop here because for some reason she doesn't seem to want me to leave the ground, which is odd. Now, every rider knows when you go to jump a fence, you're supposed to sit back as far as you can and wait for the horse to leave the ground before you get in the position where your hands and neck slide up their neck to follow the horse over the fence. But it's sometimes hard to make yourself do that because the anxiety of is it about to happen? Is he about to leave the ground? And you get nervous. Oh my gosh. And you tend to what they call jumping ahead. So I explained to Jean that she was jumping ahead and she said, no, I'm not. I know better. I've been doing this for 40 years. I'm not jumping ahead. So I said, well, I think actually you're losing your center of your body and you are subtly shifting forward and he feels it. So she got very quiet and she said, I'm having trouble settling in, aren't I? And I said, you are. And he doesn't understand it because it seems you don't trust him to leave the ground. So you're almost trying to almost like push him off the ground by rocking your whole body forward. And he said, if you just sat there and waited, it would happen. Do you think you could just sit there and wait? And she had to laugh at herself because she said it's true. She'd been so fearful of being like an old rider and a failure. She said, I have become very anxious in my riding. The more she thought about it, the more she said, all right, I guess I am doing that. She didn't want to look foolish because a lot of the people she competes against are 20 years younger than her. So she was starting to sort of overperform or display sort of anxiety behaviors that she wasn't even really that aware of. I didn't let her off the hook because I saw very clearly that Magic was saying, no, she gets nervous and she is riding differently than she does at home. So she eventually said, okay, maybe that is true. I apologize to Magic. I'm scaring him, aren't I? And I said, yes, you are. He's trying to protect both of you. He's not trying to dump you. He doesn't want to end up in the middle of the fence. So she needed to settle in about what felt good. If I said, why are you still jumping horses? Is it just because you want to go to competitions and win? She said, no, I love the feeling of being airborne. I said, oh, so the feeling of doing something that just feels wonderful, being one with the horse, feeling that power underneath you and flying. She goes, it's so fun. I've loved it since I was a little kid. I said, great. You're not really then participating in your showing that way. You're worrying more about what everybody else has done, how the competition is going, whether or not you're going to be successful, whether you're an old has-been. And I said, that's what the horse is telling me. No judgment on my part because, you know, it's hard to not do that whenever you compete at anything, I think. It's hard to not put a lot of pressure on yourself. But you're basically almost throwing yourself on the ground based on what Magic is telling me. And so we worked through it with the horse, and they ended up returning to competition. And she got to look at, you know, it's nice to be airborne with a huge animal, but at a certain age and at a certain place, if your balance and your strength can't let you do it and you're risking your health and your horse's safety, you know, maybe it's time to jump smaller fences or not jump at all. And so she went on to really think about that. We worked together a lot after those appointments, those initial appointments. And she came to realize that the need to sort of feel successful was based on the need to do something that most older people can't do anymore. And she had to let go of that and figure it out so that she and Magic could be safe and happy. And they did work it out, which was lovely because Magic was just doing what was safe and she needed to be safe. So really they weren't arguing at all, were they? Other than she was breaking bones. So she had to take responsibility for that. And so I think that's a big part of the human world. We have to take some responsibility sometimes when we ask animals to do things that, you know, horses wouldn't jump over fences unless people pointed them at them and said, please do this for me. So Magic was complying. But in the real world, you know, they used to put stone walls up and bits of wood and, you know, once in a while a horse would break out, but maybe when it was breeding season, but usually they stay where you put them, you know, in a pasture. With their friends, and they're happy to do so. When we start to ask them to do things that are contrary to what they would do in nature, you know, they have different needs all of a sudden. They need us to really be spot on sure. He needed her to sit perfectly in the center of his center of motion and wait for that fence and not throw herself at it. So we think of our civilized world as sort of normal. They think of it as, you really want me to jump that fence? Are you kidding me? Or Roland, you really want me to go out into unsafe territory, leave our safe little enclosure and our home, and I have to take care of you out there? Okay, I'll try. So they always say, okay, I'll try, or almost always. You know, they give it a whirl. So when we ask sort of extraordinary measures, it's important that we have to kind of extraordinarily, sometimes pretty hard for us to say, all right, I have to really do this well. And when it doesn't go well, I'm always happy to work with people about it. So our trainers, dogs, cats, horses, ponies, anything, you have to get inside their head about what is bothering them. Not say, well, he should be jumping the fence, or Roland shouldn't be barking at other dogs. No, you're asking him to do something that is frightening them. So you have to be a better leader is really the answer with both of those cases. So animals will always say, we're all one. We're all doing this together. I'm going to apply how I know how to do this together. And they say yes to things. Humans, lots of times, complicate things with all these layers of our egos, our mental bodies. Our minds want to feel like, oh, I'm being the best person I can be, and a good person stays fit and strong and has got a great job and does everything they're supposed to do. Our emotional body wants to feel happy and safe and content as we do it. But often we're so busy being in our minds, our busy, busy minds, that we sort of lose sight of why we were doing it to begin with. Like in this case, Jean forgot that she just loved jumping. She was getting competitive is what was happening. And that's your ego, which likes to say us versus them. This law applies to me more than it applies to you, so I have the right to do it more than you do. And so this is a very fertile and interesting place where we can always look at, well, what are we expecting from our animals when we say, goodbye, dog, I'll be back in 8 hours. Stay here and wait for me when we go to work all day. Now we have to go to work, and they can adjust to that. But when they have strange behaviors based on the fact that they're left alone and that they're separated when they're used to being in packs and they're pack animals, then we've put a strain on them. Again, our human lives, which seem so normal to us, are not so normal to them. They think, well, I would lay around in the yard with you and a couple of other dogs if I had my choice. Where are you going for 8 hours or 10 hours? So we have to do our best as people that have to sort of balance what the animal needs and what the human world expects of us or demands of us. Like you have to go to work. You can't say to your boss, oh, you know, I'll be back when I can get done with my dog. I sort of feel like hanging out with him today. Unfortunately, that's not the world we've created. So there's a little place there for some stress for everyone, right? So just remember that when your animal is behaving strangely, and I have some more good stories for you on that coming up in our next segment. When your animal is behaving strangely, it's because he's confused. Almost always. They're not usually being brats. They're not being willful. They mostly are just trying to do what they do. And our human world is confusing to them. So thank you for listening. This is Laura Rowley, and you are listening to Animal Connections with Laura Rowley.
If your dog, cat, or horse could help you with your love life, what would they suggest? It's fun to think about and a wonderful way to conduct yourself. After all, animals know well how to love and invite us to love them unconditionally. That's a pretty great way to live life. Animals always communicate with our highest good as their central focus, even when sometimes we feel stymied or frustrated with their behavior. Visit laurarowleyhealer.com to book a workshop or private long-distance phone reading. Laura's readings and workshops help you find the part of you that's able to tune in and connect to your amazing animals. Laura Rowley believes we can all understand by listening differently. Book a workshop or private long-distance phone reading now by going to laurarowleyhealer.com. That's LAURAROWLEY healer.com.
Looking for a fun and relaxing getaway? Omega's Rest and Rejuvenation Retreats are a great way to unwind and renew your spirit. Stroll through the garden, relax by the lake, or try a daily yoga or movement class. You can stretch your body, quiet your mind, and do as much or as little as you choose. Located in Rhinebeck, New York, just 90 miles north of New York City, Omega's natural environment and quiet pace allow for extraordinary experiences to unfold. Learn more at eomega.org.
Do you sometimes feel like your life is a series of problems to be solved rather than an adventure to open to? Do your challenges often bring up fear, worry, anxiety, and confusion rather than empowering you to your core? Explore powerful tools and techniques offered by Mary O'Malley in her new book, What's in the Way is the Way, and experience ease, peace, joy, and a deep trust in this amazing adventure called life. To find out more about what Mary offers, visit her website at maryomalley.com.
Are you searching for a way to help create global change? Dream Vision 7 Radio Network's vision is to have an eclectic group of radio hosts dedicated to educating, enlightening, and helping humankind with positive messages and tools that enhance lives using different modalities and programs. If you would like to join our team and help illuminate the universe, call Deborah at 508-226-1723 or Deborah at dreamvision7radio.com.
Animal Connections with Laura Rowley is an intuitive show created for you to learn what it's like to talk to animals. Laura shares 20 years of experiences of being a pet psychic and healer every Friday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, media partner for the Omega Institute. Our beloved animals share our lives and have amazing insights into our well-being, providing us with opportunities for personal growth once we truly begin to listen. It's fun to use animal wisdom to enhance our emotional and spiritual world. Who better than our furry friends to teach us the wisdom born of unconditional love?
Hi, this is Laura Rowley, and you are listening to Animal Connections with Laura Rowley on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Every Friday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time, you can listen online or on your mobile devices. To learn more and for a full schedule, go to dreamvision7radio.com, which is the media partner for the Omega Institute. My website is laurarowleyhealer.com, and you can reach me for readings or to schedule workshops for any kind of, any size group you'd like to orchestrate, where we work with you and your animals to develop a sense of closeness and perhaps your own ability, your own intuitive ability to work and speak with animals in the language that they understand, which is the topic of our day today. Their language is a little different than our language. Their language is simpler. They tend to say yes to what would make them feel free and happy in the moment, and ours is governed by a lot of rules that we made up. So if you think about how an animal would live their life versus how you would live your life, they tend to be very generous. I was saying earlier that they tend to work from almost the place that we would call our higher selves. So the question I posed somewhat ironically in my title was, are we the less evolved species or the more evolved species? So animals tend to be very supportive of us pretty much continuously throughout our times with them, which is why I think we all want one in our lives or 10 of them in our lives. That's why we have pets, companion animals, service animals. We feel so much better around them. Why? Because they behave in a way that we wish we could behave more consistently if we weren't living under the laws of man. For instance, I was on the phone with a woman and she was weeping. We were doing a remote reading with her cat that was about to be euthanized because it was deathly ill. And she wanted to say goodbye. And she wanted to make sure the cat was in agreement that this was a necessary step and that he wasn't going to suffer. Was she doing the right thing by taking him to the veterinarians? And she wanted to know, you know, where the cat would like to be buried, and she really wanted to make sure she was doing the best she could be doing. So We're talking remotely to her cat, which was at the veterinarian's in very ill health and kidney failure, advanced kidney failure. And she's talking to me on the phone from her home. I'm in my home, and all of her dogs, she had three dogs, came and sat on her feet and put heads on her lap and wagged tails, and she started to cry. She said, "Do you believe I have all these lovely kind of angelic dogs trying to make me feel better about the fact that the cat that they've always hated is going to be put to sleep today?" The cats and the dogs did not like each other. The cat hated the dogs and was mean to them his whole life, which was kind of almost funny because they were all afraid of the cat. And there were the dogs all assembled saying, "Oh, you could tell, I'm so sorry. You know, you're sad, Mom. Are you okay? What can we do to help you?" Wagging their tails. And she said, "Isn't that a beautiful thing? They're not really holding a grudge to the fact that this cat tortured them their whole lives." Which was, of course, the cat's joy and privilege to do that. He enjoyed sort of pulling rank on all these cats, or on all these dogs, and would sabotage them. Like when they'd go around the corner, it might, you know, jump off of a chair onto the last one and scare it, or try to scratch him or hiss. And so they all got spooked by the cat. Cat ruled the roost for sure. So, but there they were commiserating with her on the deepest level. She said, "I am so comforted," because we ended up then segueing that conversation. The cat was definitely prepared to depart and was probably going to do so on his own in a day or so anyway. And so we ended up having a lovely conversation with those three dogs about what they could do to help her with her grief. Now, who wouldn't want friends like that, you know, that set aside grudges, set aside their own injured egos, because for like a decade they were tortured by this cat. They didn't care at all. All of a sudden, the only thing that mattered to them was this woman's happiness and her depth of despair and her grief. Now, that's a good friend, right? Those dogs are good friends. And so that's more like what our higher self is, right? It's the part of us that wants to respond with what? What is the most important thing we can respond with? Certainly love, but maybe the highest form of love, which is when we respond with compassion. That's always the best thing we could do. And my example earlier with the woman at the bank teller, I had to tell her, "No, I can't take your check and deposit it because you don't have the right ID." She wanted to be compassionate, I'm sure. Her face was tortured. I happened to have witnessed that particular conversation at my bank. And you could see that the bank teller would have preferred to be compassionate. And so somehow it would be nice if we could make a society where we could apply natural rules and the rules of mankind in a more compassionate way. But we certainly can do that more in our own worlds, in our own homes, and in the world where we communicate with our animals. My own case, when I was, maybe 20 years ago, I was building a fence line around my property. And I had a very elderly, sweet, sweet dog who I was like her sixth home, I think. And she was wonderful. So she used to go out and visit with the guys that were building the fence, and they would hang out with her. They'd give her drinks out of her thermos. They'd give her food. She loved being with them. They'd pet her on their breaks. And so the minute they would pull in while they were building the fence, she would want to go run over there and see them. So tragically, one of them hit her with his car and broke her back. He didn't know she was laying under the car for shade, and he jumped in the car, turned the ignition, threw it in drive, and killed her. So they screamed to find me. I was home. It was right in my front yard. So I ran out there, and I saw that we were going to have to, you know, get a vet to her quickly. They confirmed that her back was, in fact, fractured, so badly, badly fractured. So they said that you're going to have to put her to sleep. She's not going to be able to walk or have any, you know, ability to contain herself. So I'm pretty hysterical, naturally. And that dog just kept licking my tears off of my face and saying to me, "It's okay. I'm just going to go to the other side. I'm going to the light. I'll be fine. I feel so bad that you're this upset." Now, here's this dog that's crying and dying and in terrible agony with a broken back, and she's worried about whether or not I'm okay, because she knows that I'm already grieving her because, you know, I loved that dog. She was a fabulous fabulous dog, kind of a motherly, beautiful creature. And I, of course, felt responsible that I'd let her out in the yard and hadn't cautioned those guys that she didn't hear well and she might not hear the car start. They felt terrible, but that dog just kept licking my tears and gave me the most amazing, soulful look, like, I'm so sorry you're hurting this badly. It's going to be hard to lose me. And she was right, it was. So there she was, just being, well, that's pretty angelic, isn't it, to just care more about your own life, you know, less about your own life than about somebody's suffering when you leave. And that was my little dog, Chelsea. And so I've experienced a lot of this firsthand myself, and I'm always just so amazed by how when you function from the animal kingdom's perspective, where we're all one, Mother Nature rules sort of supreme over all of us, no matter what size brain we have or our brain function. And in that functioning place of thinking we are all one, everything kind of goes with flow and we always respond with love and kind of uncommon courage. That dog was hurting and she wanted to make sure I understood she wasn't mad at me and that I should have no remorse or guilt over it. What a beautiful gift to have given me, really. I talked to a woman who didn't tell me her job as we were discussing it. She said that she had a horse named Sonar, and he was in an exercise program to rehabilitate some injured tendons in his front leg that he obtained from jumping. And she said he's not being very quiet when we put him in the treadmill. Or, you know, he's getting anxious and now we're having trouble getting him in the treadmill. And I want you to explain to him that if he would go in this special machine to work on a slant in water, he could gain strength without damaging his already damaged tendons. And we might be able to get him back to a healthy and sound place where he could perform again if he wanted to. But there was no pressure on him to perform if he didn't want to. So she was coming at it from the most lovely place. So he said, well, I don't want to go on that machine anymore. And I said, well, how come? You know, she's, you know, got you at this very lovely facility that has this sophisticated, you know, equipment. And, you know, what's the problem with it? Are you scared? And he said, no. He said, she has a strong need for me to be successful at this. And she's going to feel like a failure if I don't get better, and I'm not sure I'm going to get better. In fact, it hurts worse, and I think she is fooling herself if she thinks I'm going to get back to doing my old job this way. I think we need a new approach. So I'm not walking into that treadmill because I want her to know that it hurts more than less to do this exercise. Well, we all know that PT can be a little uncomfortable, right? Physical therapy can sometimes hurt. So I asked the woman who phoned, I said, you know, he seems to think he's not getting better, he's getting worse. Are you sure this is the right program for him? And then she said, well, of course it is. It's this is my job. And I said, oh, what do you mean? So then she explained to me that she was a veterinarian that owned a facility that did only rehabilitation work. They, horses were sent from all over the country or that part of the country to this facility to work out on her special machines to get strong to go back to their work again, very much like physical therapy for people. So she was kind of not believing that the horse thought he wasn't going to get better because this is her whole life. It's her whole mission. So we clarified with the horse. I asked a few more questions, and I got him to tell me a few more things. And he said, well, he said, what if I don't get better? Then she's going to feel terrible about her life's work because I think I'm a little more hurt than she recognizes. And she just, because I'm hers, she wants it to be okay for me. And she's applying her life's work like, you know, 100%, 110%. And he said, this will make her feel terrible and think she's not helping other horses. And she does help other horses. It's a good therapy session. It's a good therapy place. But she said, I'm a little more broken than she is willing to acknowledge because her diagnostics just didn't show how badly that tendon was actually ruptured. So I explained that to this lovely veterinarian who really earnestly wanted to help. And I said, you know, I think he's trying to tell you that maybe your ego thinks you can fix everything. But in this case, because he's your very own, of course you want to fix him most, but maybe you need to have another opinion or get some more information because he said he's getting worse, not better. She was so thankful for that. At first, it, of course, it upset her. But she said, I am doing that. I'm pushing him to keep going. And I said, he feels pushed, so he's backing up and saying, stop pushing me. She was really, really relieved and honored to realize that she was doing what her vet training, the laws of her vet school, had taught her to do. Instead of really listening to her own horse, who was saying, I don't want to do this, and I'm not feeling better. She said, this is so simple. Why didn't I get this? She was laughing at herself. And I said, well, I know. It's because you care about your work and you wanted to make sure you were doing the best for him. But really, you were trying to push your work on him. And she said, absolutely, I'm doing that. And she was going to get second opinions and try a different tactic. There's other ways to try to heal that issue, and she was going to pursue them. So here was this lovely animal saying, she's hurting me instead. I don't want to hurt her and upset her, so I'm going to show her she's upsetting herself. Again, a creature acting more like our higher self would act, our spiritual self, which comes from a compassionate, loving side, versus what our ego does, which comes often from our frontal lobes, which are the part of our brain that has made us be the most evolved species on the planet. But we forget and apply sometimes the wrong rules for the wrong reasons. And animals, generously, always did the generous, loving thing and kindly pointed out to us when we are making that mistake. And that's a great thing for us to remember and to learn, because we've made rules, we can always unmake rules and make better rules. And that's what I always hope to facilitate, an awakening of the person I'm working with. And of course, I always learn so much with every single appointment, every single minute I'm on the phone doing these conversations or these workshops. I always think, I could be more compassionate and loving too. So thank you very much for tuning in today and for listening to my show, Animal Connections with Laura Rowley. You're welcome to hop on my website, give me any feedback, laurarowleyhealer.com, or my Facebook page, which is Animal Connections with Laura Rowley. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining Animal Connections with Laura Rowley. Heard every Friday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Join Laura next time to discover how you can embrace the wisdom flowing from your loved animals. Communication starts with an intention to understand. Each week, Laura helps you find your own unique ability to create a better understanding of yourself as taught through the loving eyes of your animals. To connect with Laura Rowley, go to laurarowleyhealer.com. That's LauraRowley healer.com.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.